I want to share with you this morning my memories of the First World War and the impressions which have remained with me over the past 76 years. I was born at Minh Mai, but during the war I spent my time divided between Sydney, Minh Mai and Currie. Our home in Sydney was a home away from home for any coalfield boy, and we seemed always to have soldiers in our home and around our dinner table. My sisters and I were given as souvenirs rising suns and buttons from the soldiers' uniforms, and these we really treasured. I remember the recruiting drives in Minh Mai. They were exciting events. I would stand at the roadside, thrilled by the band music, excitement and expectation. Then down the street would come the recruiting procession, some on foot, but mostly mounted soldiers in full dress, and quite a number of horses with empty saddles, stirrups hanging free. I can remember even now the expressions on the boys' faces as they left the crowds on the roadside and rushed over to climb into the empty saddles, keen, proud, gallant, and courageous. They were going to do their bit. They were going to fight for the Empire and Australia. I can still feel cold shivers when I remember the stirring music. Drums, brass, cheering, clapping, "Good on you, mate," from the crowd as more and more boys mounted and filled those empty saddles. Mothers and sisters with tears rolling down their cheeks and also carried away with pride and love. I remember the recruiting drives in Sydney. I remember going shopping with my mother on a Friday night. Mum would shop and I'd stand in the crowd or sit on the recruiting platform if I could find the space. One evening in particular, the recruiting officer was telling how he couldn't return to the war because he had been wounded and had been sent home. A man in the crowd shouted, "What happened to you, mate? Were you shot in the back while running away?" "No, son," replied the recruiting officer. "I was looking around to see if you were coming over to give us a hand." The crowd loved this. My father tried to enlist, but he was refused because he was a policeman and was needed in Australia. You see, there was a strong anti-war movement and violence between soldiers and members of the anti-war movement. One of the groups who were most organised and outspoken against the Australian involvement in the war were the International Workers of the World, or the IWWs. They were against our boys fighting in a European war and were regarded as traitors because of their stand. We used to refer to them as "I won't workers." So my father wasn't accepted for the army because the police were needed to keep peace between the anti-war movement and the soldiers. If you have a careful look at the marble in the Sydney railway station, you'll see bullet holes in the marble, which is proof of the battles which took place between soldiers and police. I remember our family leaving a city church one night and walking into a street meeting being held by an anti-war group. Soldiers had gathered, and were objecting to what the speaker was saying. The soldiers pushed the speaker from his platform and a riot broke out. When Dad became aware of the disturbance, he pushed we kids behind a big fat letterbox where we were safe, but could see all. Police were called in and the soldiers scattered, trying to avoid the police charging them with batons or arrest. It was my impression that the police were only obeying orders and weren't happy in turning on our soldiers. I remember my two uncles, Bill and Joe. Bill was quick, energetic, adventurous. Joe, intelligent, thoughtful, not given to hasty decisions. Bill enlisted as soon as he was 18. Joe hesitated, making arrangements, planning for his leaving. Men of his age who hadn't enlisted were regarded as cowards, and it was the practice for women and girls to send to such boys a white feather as a symbol of cowardice. They were usually sent by post, and senders remained unknown. Uncle Joe received two letters with white feathers. He was furious and hurt. He studied the envelopes, hoping to find some clue about the senders. Then, tearing them apart and putting the feathers in the fire, he said, "Well, I'm damned if I'll go now." And he never did. His brother Bill sent letters from the mud-filled trenches where he was fighting in France, and they always sent a message, "For God's sake, Joe, keep out of it." Yeah. I remember all the spare moments at home were used for knitting socks and balaclava caps for our soldiers. All we thought of then was the misery of freezing mud and slush in the shell holes and trenches, and our hopes were to make life just a little easier if it only meant warm socks to keep the soldiers' feet warm. I remember the music being stirring, love of country and the empire, telling stories of bravery, endurance and sacrifice. This is one which I clearly remember. Fighting with the brave Australians, the boys who know no fear, carving their way through the aliens, causing the world to cheer. Nothing on the field can daunt them. They came to do their share, and a lot more we know may be wanted. So the boys of Australia, get there. Can't you hear them cooey? You're wanted at the Dardanelles. The dreaded news of a loved one being killed in action was usually taken to relatives by a minister of religion. There were no radios or television in those days. I can remember my grandmother's face as she glanced out of a window and saw the minister walking up the street. The dread, fear, and almost terror was written on her face and in her eyes, almost saying, "Oh God, don't let it be my boys," and then replaced by sympathy for the one on whose door he knocked. Yes, I also recall the end of the war. Welcome home parties were in full swing. But the soldiers had brought home from Europe a terrible flu, likened to pneumonia. It raged in city and country, a worldwide epidemic. Doctors were almost unavailable. Schools were closed, and we had to wear masks. chemists and most stores had a steam fumigation installed. Strong men and women were dying, and cabinet makers were rushing through cheap coffins, working almost non-stop. The police were busy watching and checking, and their tasks were tragic and sometimes heartbreaking. My father was in the city in the early hours of the morning when he came upon two children sitting on the curb. Dad questioned the children, and they said, "We can't wake Mum and Dad." When my father went into their home, he found both parents dead. I remember, too, the ones we loved who didn't come home. My aunt's fiancé had enlisted, but he wouldn't marry my aunt before sailing. He was worried, wondering if he returned, how he would be in health. Shell-shocked, limbless, blind, or even in a mental hospital. This was the fate of so many. So he bought land and had money set aside for my aunt. He didn't come home and lies somewhere over there in France. His final gift to my aunt was a small pebble in a matchbox. This small pebble had saved his life earlier in the war, while on a forced route march through the desert. The small pebble had kept his mouth moist while others had gone mad with thirst. These are my memories of the First World War. We all see and understand incidents in a different way. But no matter what the world is saying now, my memories are of men who were willing to give their lives to make their homeland safe and the world a better place to live in.